Gospel according to Luke, chapter 4.
Glory to you, O Lord.
Jesus returned in the power of the Spirit to Galilee, and his reputation spread throughout the region. He was teaching in the Galilean synagogues, and all were loud in their praise. Jesus came to Nazareth, where he had been brought up. Entering the synagogue on the Sabbath, as was his habit, Jesus stood up to do the reading. When the book of the prophet Isaiah was handed to him, he unrolled the scroll and found the passage where it was written, "The Spirit of our God is upon me, because the Most High has anointed me to bring good news to those who are poor. God has sent me to proclaim liberty to those held captive, recovery of sight to those who are blind, and release to those who are in prison, to proclaim the year of God's favor." Rolling up the scroll, Jesus gave it back to the attendant and sat down. The eyes of all the synagogue were fixed on Jesus. Then he said to them, "Today in your hearing, this scripture is fulfilled." The Gospel of Christ.
Praise to you, O Christ.
So looking around, all but a few of you can cast your minds back to 1969. And those of you who can't cast your minds that far back, boy, are you lucky. Anyway, it was 1969, and I was only 12 years old, and my family had just moved to a small fishing village south of Vancouver. I was the new kid in a very tightly knit grade 7 class, and I remember being angry a lot back then. Being 12 is tough, but being 12 and in a new town, well, that's the kind of hell that I wouldn't want to wish on anyone. There were only two places where I felt safe. One was in my bedroom, where I could escape into my books or listen to music. And the other place was, believe it or not, in music class. We had a really cool young music teacher. She must have been fresh out of teacher's college because she had all these unusual ideas about something she kept calling music appreciation. And the songs that we sang in Ms. Conroy's class were the songs that we were hearing on our transistor radios. Some days she'd let us put our heads down on our desks and she'd just play music, and all we had to do was appreciate it. Not all of the music was stuff that we'd heard on the radio. Sometimes Miss Conroy would sneak in some jazz. Not any kind of jazz, mind you. Something called improvisational jazz, which most of us had never heard before. It was so cool to my 12-year-old ears that I gave Miss Conroy a pass when she would sometimes slip into teacher mode and put some classical music on the record player. And Tom, I'm sorry to say this, but the only time we rose up in rebellion was when she tried to play opera for us.
How sad.
I know. Well, one day, Miss Conroy announced that we had been listening to her music for far too long. And it was time that we began to listen to our own music. Miss Conroy explained that she was going to divide us into pairs, and each pair would have to work together to select a piece of music to bring to the class, to share with our classmates, so that they too could appreciate it. And we would have to explain to the class why the particular piece that we had chosen was worth paying attention to. Now, even though there were all sorts of pieces of music that I thought would be great for this assignment, I began to panic. Who on earth would want to work with me on such a project? The thought of being teamed up with any one of my classmates struck fear into my heart. I didn't have any real friends in this class. And as the new kid, I knew that anybody would want to be partnered with anybody other than myself. Visions of being left out, all alone, without a partner, began to overwhelm me as Miss Conroy announced that we were going to draw names out of a hat in order to determine who our partners would be. When my turn came to pull a partner's name out of the hat, I didn't even know what to hope for. I didn't know people well enough to want anyone in particular to be my partner. There was only one person in the whole class that I was absolutely sure that I did not want to have as a partner. I, like all my classmates, was positively terrified of this one person in particular, and for the sake of this sermon, I'm going to call him Kenny. Kenny sure wasn't 12 years old. He was a few years older than the rest of us, which means that he'd been held back. He was a big guy, he had dark hair, and he was extremely good looking. But unlike the other adolescent boys in our class, Kenny was already shaving. Once during the lunch hour, I actually bore witness to Kenny, the bully. A younger boy, one of my brother's classmates, was forced by Kenny to eat an apple core that had been discarded in the garbage a few days before. And the kid ate that rotting core rather than face whatever it was that Kenny was going to do to him if he didn't. Kenny was big, he was tough, and he was loud. And most of us were frightened of him. And because kids are cruel, well, Kenny had cooties, don't you know? We didn't treat him very well. But there was something about Kenny. Maybe it was his good looks. Maybe it was, actually, I'm pretty sure it was, his buckskin jacket. Remember the ones with the fringe? I'm pretty sure that's what got him his cool factor. But he was wild. There was a kind of wildness to him, and most of the girls just wanted to be near him. So I was more than a bit upset when, of all people, I pulled Kenny's name out of the hat. What piece of music could the two of us possibly have in common? And how was I even going to talk to him? Miss Conroy slipped perilously into my bad books on the day she forced me into the company of the dreaded Kenny. Ours was an uneasy partnership. There was precious little conversation involved. Kenny knew what piece of music we were going to use. Kenny told me what I was going to tell the class about our piece of music. Fortunately, I actually knew and liked the piece that Kenny chose. It had been a big hit that summer, and I actually owned a copy of the record. The only problem was my copy was a 45. You guys are going to have to ask me later what a 45 is. Kenny insisted that the 45 wouldn't be good enough, because the version of this particular piece of music that he wanted us to share with the class could only be appreciated if it was the one off the LP. The version on the album included a trumpet solo that never made it onto the 45, which was a shorter version fit for radio. Well, that's how I ended up in front of a bunch of strange classmates that I didn't really know, standing beside a boy who, though handsome and tough, had suddenly become monosyllabic as I struggled to explain our choice of music. Would you like to do some music appreciation?
Let a painted pony, let the spinning wheel turn. Did you find the directing sign on the straight and narrow highway? Look your mind, the reflecting sign, just let it shine within your mind and show you the colors. A painted pony on the spinning wheel.
Does that sound like the 60s?
Someone's waiting just for you. Spinning wheel, spinning true. Drop all your troubles by the riverside. Let a painted pony, let the spinning wheel fly.
Memories, eh? Now, Kenny is right. You really need the longer LP version. That's the radio one. So if you want to hear it later, I have it. You need that trumpet solo to really appreciate it. That horn section could make anything sound wonderful. Spinning Wheel was just the first that made it to the top of the hit parade. There's stuff like You Made Me So Very Happy, God Bless the Child, Heidi-ho, and When I Die. Thanks to Kenny, I bought every LP that Blood, Sweat, and Tears ever recorded. I actually dragged Carol to a Blood, Sweat, and Tears concert in Chautauqua last summer, but David Clayton Thomas was not there. So what has any of this got to do with this morning's gospel reading? Well, the words that the writer of the Gospel of Luke puts into the mouth of Jesus of Nazareth have been spinning around in my head all week long. I keep hearing Jesus quote the words of the prophet Isaiah, "The Spirit of our God is upon me, because the Most High has anointed me to bring good news to those who are poor. God has sent me to proclaim liberty to those held captive, recovery of sight to those who are blind, and release to those in prison, to proclaim the year of God's favor." The year of God's favor is the prophet Isaiah's way of describing the year of Jubilee. Written into the Jewish law was a provision meant to address the systemic injustices that creep into the law as time goes by. It is said that every 50 years, a Jubilee would be declared. During the year of Jubilee, debts would be forgiven, property would be restored to its original owners, and prisoners would be set free. We don't know how often or how widespread the practice of Jubilee was. We only know that it was an ideal held up to the people as worthy. It seems that even the ancients knew that corruption and neglect takes its toll over time in any system. Here today in Canada, we can see in our own system of justice that corruption and neglect, coupled with laws enacted to quench the public's thirst for revenge or to quell our fears, have led to systemic abuse in our prison system. In Canada, both prisoners and correction officers are being held captive to a system that sure could use a little Jubilee right now. The case of Ashley Smith has shone a light upon the ridiculous systems that exist in our prisons that force inmates and guards into impossible situations. Our prison system is broken. Our prisoners languish while our correction officers become frustrated and burnt out. And the situation is only going to get worse as we learn, as we lean more and more toward the American model of privatizing the prison system. The passage of the recent omnibus bill, which promises to get tough on crime, will ensure that more and more young people will end up incarcerated, which will no doubt prove profitable to those new private prisons that may be coming sooner than we think. All this while crime rates in Canada are lower than they have ever been in our history. And yet we are more afraid than ever before. This get tough on crime attitude is nothing new. But is it necessary? Is it prudent? Is it even useful? I don't have the answers here. But I can't listen to the words Jesus is said to have spoken without wondering what Jubilee might look like here in Canada. The Spirit of our God is upon me because the Most High has anointed me to bring good news to those who are poor. God has sent me to proclaim liberty to those held captive, recovery of sight to those who are blind, and release to those in prison, to proclaim the year of God's favor. What goes up must come down. Spinning wheel gotta go round. You got no money and you got no home. Spinning wheel, spinning all alone. Talking about your troubles and you never learn. Ride a painted pony, let the spinning wheel turn. David Clayton Thomas was the lead singer of Blood, Sweat, and Tears. David Clayton Thomas is a Canadian. On Wednesday, David Clayton Thomas wrote an article that appeared in the Globe and Mail. And to be honest with you, it should have been the whole text of this sermon. I'm going to read it in its entirety. Thomas writes, "I'm not an expert in the criminal justice system, just a product of it. The story of Ashley Smith, the teenager who strangled herself in her prison cell as guards watched, has prompted me to speak out. But for fortune, that could have been me. At 15, I ran away from a brutally abusive father, homeless, freezing. I broke into office buildings for a place to sleep. It was a relief to be arrested. At least it meant a roof over my head and three meals a day. I did not know it also meant a free education in a predatory, upside-down society where the strong rule, the weak are victimized, and the inmate code is all that matters. The guards lock the doors and enforce the rules, but the inmates run the joint. Break the rules, and you get a few days in the hole. Break the code, and you get killed. Fighting is a survival tool, but it's assault in the eyes of the law, punishable with more time. If a kid is driven to attempt suicide or self-harm, well, that's also punishable. That's how Ashley Smith, originally charged as a juvenile with a minor crime, ended up serving time as an adult. I was just one of thousands of lost homeless kids, kids you see on the street every day. I was not beyond redemption. They just treated me as if I was. The lessons of prison guarantee failure after release. In no time, I was back. Recycled for four more years in hellholes like the Burwash Industrial Farm, a notorious labor camp south of Sudbury that has since been closed. Are we treating troubled kids any differently today? Clearly, the vicious cycle of recidivism is alive and well. A staggering 90% of young offenders sent to prison reoffend within 2 years, according to a recent government report. And meanwhile, despite evidence that it is ineffective policy, the federal government is getting tough on crime, imposing mandatory sentencing, and building more prisons to house more criminals, even as the crime rate continues to fall. More and more prisoners show up with mental illness. They don't get better in jail, they get worse. Every one of these men and women was once a kid we didn't care about. These aren't other people's kids. These are our kids, your neighbor's kids. A full 6% of Canadian children aged 12 to 17 were accused of a crime in 2010. Most were not charged or imprisoned, but new changes to the criminal code will ensure that ever more of them are crushed in the gears of the criminal justice system. Music saved me. It was a crazy fluke that I ever discovered my talent. At the age of 21, 2 convictions under my belt, I walked out of Millbrook Prison with $20 in my pocket, a mail-order guitar, and a dream of becoming a blues singer. I survived the system that fails us all, not Ashley Smith. When she strangled herself in her segregation cell, the only people who could have saved her watched and did nothing. Call it crying for help, attention-seeking behavior, whatever you want, she did not deserve to die. Canada's correctional investigator has repeatedly called for an end to solitary confinement. Nobody listens. Now, as a coroner's inquest reconstructs her last moments, all of Canada is watching. Will we fail her once again? Will we do nothing once again? The cold gears of our justice system are tearing apart others like her at this very moment. Why do we remain unmoved? She wasn't someone else's kid. There but for fortune, she could have been yours, could have been mine, could have been me. The Spirit of our God is upon me, because the Most High has anointed me to bring good news to those who are poor. God has sent me to proclaim liberty to those held captive, recovery of sight to those who are blind, and release to those in prison, to proclaim the year of God's favor. Nobody ever, ever messed with me when I started high school. My classmates faced the trials and tribulations that most first-year high school students face, but nobody ever bothered me. Kenny was my friend, and nobody dared bother me. Kenny took care of his own. Kenny was wild, and he was always getting in trouble. And all the girls wanted to be near him. I, for a reason I didn't understand at the time, was immune to his charms. But there's just something about a bad boy that teenage girls find so attractive, so I was the envy of all the girls in my high school. That Kenny actually spoke to me did wonders for my social life. Unfortunately, Kenny didn't last long in high school. He dropped out shortly after the Christmas holidays. I heard from him from time to time. He was in and out of reform school, and then in and out of prison. I ran into him in the city once. We were in our late 20s. I was working for a tour operator, and Kenny was looking for work. And we shared a cup of coffee. We talked about the old days and promised to meet up for a drink sometime. I wish I'd have done that. I heard years later that Kenny died in prison. He was about 35 years old when he died. I don't know what he was in prison for. I don't know how or why he died. And I don't have any answers to this particular problem. I do know that each of us shares a responsibility to, at the very least, ask questions. We need to ask the tough questions so that together we can figure out what Jubilee might look like here and now in this country. Blood, Sweat, and Tears' last big hit was a song entitled, "And When I Die." Like all of their music, I don't ever hear Blood, Sweat, and Tears without thinking of Kenny. And when I die, and when I'm gone, there'll be one child born in this world to carry on. Now troubles are many. They're as deep as a well. I can swear there ain't no heaven, but I pray there ain't no hell. Swear there ain't no heaven, and I pray there ain't no hell. But I'll never know by living, only my dying will tell. Yes, only my dying will tell. Only my dying will tell. Give me my freedom for as long as I be. All I ask from living is to have no chains on me. All I ask of living is to have no chains on me. And all I ask of dying is to go naturally. I want to go naturally. The Spirit of our God is upon me, because the Most High has anointed me to bring good news to those who are poor. God has sent me to proclaim liberty to those held captive, recovery of sight to those who are blind, and release to those in prison, to proclaim the year of God's favor. Let the spinning wheel spin. Amen.